This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Simon Estes began his opera career in the 1960s, establishing himself as one of the greatest voices on the world stage. He was also among the first African Americans, following Marian Anderson and Leontine Price, to sing in major opera companies. Here he is in a 1985 Metropolitan Opera production of Aida with Leontine Price. Simon Estes has performed with just about every big opera company in the world. He has sung for presidents and popes, and he's used his celebrity to help others as well. He's involved in the fight against AIDS and malaria, and he also helped young artists try to make it to his alma mater, the Juilliard School of Music. Simon Estes is the guest speaker Saturday at the World Voice Day, sponsored by the Duke Voice Care Center. It's from 11:30 to 5 at the Renaissance Raleigh Hotel in North Hills. But first, Simon Estes is our guest on the State of Things. Welcome to the program. So good to have you here.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
You grew up in Centerville, Iowa.
Yes.
How did you get interested in opera?
A voice teacher heard me at the University of Iowa named Charles Kellis in 1961. I had never seen or heard an opera nor a symphonic orchestra. And he heard me singing in a choral group called the Old Gold Singers. And I started taking voice lessons with him. He said, you know, you have a voice to sing opera. And I more or less said, what's opera? So he loaned me recordings of Cesare Siepi, the famous Italian bass baritone, Leontine Price, Maria Callas, Jerome Hines, and Eileen Farrell. And then one symphonic piece, Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade. And I listened to those old 33 and a thirds, and I took them back to Mr. Kellis, and I said, I really like that stuff. And he said, well, you have a voice to sing opera. And he said, you need to go to an all musical school. So he was a man who introduced me to classical music and opera. And I think that God sent him out to the University of Iowa to find me.
Wow. But you really did like that stuff when you heard it. In other words, you had heard of opera. You're joking.
Heard the term opera. Right. I mean, opera. Opera in Italian means to work. But I didn't know anything about it. And I heard a recording when I was young going in for Mario Lanza, mm-hmm. when he was singing, you know, Be My Love and all those wonderful songs and Granada. But I didn't know anything really about opera. I knew I'd heard it, but that's it. So this man introduced me to it, and he even heard Maria Callas back in his days and Tibaldi and all those people.
And you loved it right away. You were in a singing group, a choral group. Were you planning to sing?
Well, when I started out university, college life, I wanted to be a doctor, so I was in pre-med. Then I was interested in theology and social psychology and eventually music because I was one of those professional students, you know. But I think dormantly speaking or latently speaking, that was always inside of my heart and my mind, but I'd had no exposure to this type of music. And then once I heard it, it just blossomed, and I said, wow, I love that.
What did you do from that point? How did your formal training then?
I went to Juilliard. Well, I studied with Mr. Kellis for 2 years at the University of Iowa. I wasn't in the School of Music at that particular time. I was back in pre-med. And he gave me free voice lessons, you know, because I didn't have any money. And I said, well, Mr. Kellis, if ever I have a career, I want to pay you back. He said, Simon, it's not if, it's when. He said, you will have a career. He said, but I want you to remain as the way your parents trained you to remain humble. So he is a man that introduced me to opera and said, you should go to an all-musical school. So he arranged an audition at Juilliard. They gave me a full scholarship. I got a Rockefeller grant. I was there for 2 years and went over, actually kind of following a girlfriend off to Germany. And I sang for an agent, Friedrich Posch in Dusseldorf. He heard me sing in December of 64. He arranged an audition for the Deutsche Oper in West Berlin right after the first year of 65. I auditioned for them. I was still a student at Juilliard. And they offered me the role of the king in Aida. And so that was going to be in April, and I'd never been on the stage before in my life, an operatic stage. And so I go back to the States, learn the role of the king, come back to Berlin 13 days before the performance. They said I had to sing Rumpfus, which is the high priest, which is the biggest bass role. So to make a long story short, I memorized it. It was in German in those days, not Italian, in 13 days, and made my debut. And from then, I won the Tchaikovsky competition in 66 in Moscow, the bronze medal, and then sang for President Johnson, and then my career just took off.
Yeah. After you sang for Johnson, it took off from there.
Yeah.
Fabulous career. Among the first African-Americans to really break through for major opera companies, was this much of a factor? Was your race much of a factor?
Oh, absolutely. It really was. I was very sad. I remember I came back to the States because I started in Berlin in 65. And I had difficulty trying to sing in some of the opera houses in my own country. And I remember I called my mother from New York City, and I was actually crying. I'm not ashamed to admit I was crying, even though I was a man. And I said, you know, mother, they won't let me sing in the opera houses in my own country because I'm colored, because I'd already sung in London and Paris and Berlin and Munich, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, well, son, you just get down on your knees and you pray for those people. And so the racial thing was a problem. And it still is today. If you stop and think about it, if I were to ask you how many black conductors do we have, or how many black managers do we have, or how many black stage directors of operas, and how many black people are in orchestras, there's still a problem there. It's getting better, but it was a problem for me, but not in Europe. In Europe, La Scala, Paris, London, Covent Garden, I sang in all the opera houses. They stressed more on the talent of singing rather than on skin color, because we have makeup. You know, they can make somebody look like E.T. if they want to. So we have makeup. So they went more on the voice than the skin color or the nationality.
And you made it back here. And you've been also very active in humanitarian causes, AIDS work. And when did you start becoming active in those causes?
Well, the most recent was when I sang for the grand finale at the World Cup this past July in Johannesburg, South Africa. I invited my choir to sing with me. Before I went out to sing, they told me, one of the producers, and they had a big fan, not a fan, but a soccer player, and they told me that over 1 million children die in Africa every year because of a mosquito bite, malaria. So my heart was touched, and I decided I wanted to do something about that. So right now I'm in a process of helping to raise money through a CD that I made, Save the Children, Save Their Lives, to help buy these nets that cost $5 to save lives. Mm-hmm. Every 30 seconds, a child dies from a mosquito bite in Africa, and 90% of all the deaths are in Africa. And I think God just gave me this love for people and humanity and to want to help. I was just born this way, I think.
And born this way with the voice. Obviously, you're that voice teacher in Iowa heard that. How much does training play a part in your life and in general for opera singers?
I think it's vitally important. First of all, I want to say I think it's fantastic that here at Duke you folks have this World Voice Day, because a human voice is the only instrument that is really human, and it needs nurturing, it needs direction. It has to be recognized if it has this very special gift of singing opera, and it needs to be well taken care of. And so that's a vital, important part of becoming an opera singer. You have to have that basic spatial vocal folds, or vocal cords as we call them, but then they need to be properly directed and nurtured.
Can one start out as, how much of that is nature and how much is nurture? How great could I be if I really worked at it?
I think the nature or the gift from God is first, mm-hmm. but then the nurturing, those two ends, nature and nurture, go together. You can have a great, great talent, but if you don't develop a vocal technique, you don't sing a long time either. There are many factors that go into this. So it's important that we develop a technique, but I think it needs to be an individual technique that suits one particular singer, because we all have our own DNA. So we can't just have everything to go a certain way in order to get everybody to sing. Now, the one thing that everybody has to do, and I always stress, is breathing. The breath is the foundation of speaking, singing, and even living. So that's very important. But the rest of it, if we don't get the proper direction, or if we get direction too soon, chronologically speaking, for young people, I think that can be a major concern.
What's too soon, do you think?
Well, I don't think people should take serious voice lessons before they're about 17, 18 years of age. Because the vocal cords and the larynx, it's still developing. It can develop between 18 and 24 years of age, let's say. And to put all this intellectual and cerebral and academic knowledge into the brains of young people, number one, the reasoning area of the brain hasn't fully developed yet anyhow. But in order to become an opera singer, it's like being an athlete. You have to wait till the body, you've passed through puberty and developed. So if we put all this pressure and all this information when people are very young, I think it has a negative effect many, many times. So I don't think people should give serious voice lesson when somebody's 12 and 13 and 14 years of age. Let them sing. Let them enjoy music. Work with them on interpretation, on the joy of singing. Get them to sing from their heart and their soul and just enjoy music. And then when they're older, it works. Now, I can't use myself as a scientific study because I'm one person, but I didn't have my first voice lesson until I was 23 years of age from Mr. Kellis, who discovered me. Knowing what I know now, that was a great blessing that I'd never studied before I was 23, I think.
You know, I've only got about 30 seconds left, so if you can answer this in that time, I'd be appreciative. We see this question a lot. Where are all the great voices today? Where's opera today?
I think what's happening is the voices are not getting a chance to be developed with time. I think they're starting too soon to put pressure on them to sing in a certain way, make them sound like somebody who's my age when they're 22. And I think this is a problem. And I think that a lot of voices, I'm sorry to say, are being damaged before they get a chance to develop.
Thank you very much, Simon Estes. So much. What a great pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Simon Estes, Distinguished Professor and Artist in Residence at Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa. He is the guest speaker Saturday at World Voice Day, sponsored by the Duke Voice Care Center. It's from 11:30 to 5 p.m. at the Renaissance Raleigh Hotel in North Hills. I'm going to be there, too. For more information, go to dukehealth.org. Coming up next, the poetry of Gibbons Ruark. Stay with us on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.